Off the ball. Rugby.
He was at the Stormers for a long time.
Yeah.
He's such a good coach. And I say coach, I mean the work ethic, the detail, the way he conveys it. No ego. You don't see him trying to take any media limelight. He's not come with celebrity. He just wants to win. And I think he's like one of the best coaches I've ever come across.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Sunday Paper Review on Off the Ball.
And you're welcome back to Off the Ball Sunday here on News Talk. It's John Duggan with you through to 7 o'clock. Time now for the Sunday Paper Review over the next 90 minutes, which is apt given the football theme. Adrian Barry off this week. I'm delighted to have in studio the sports editor of the Irish Daily Mail and Mail on Sunday, Orla McElroy, and the comedian and broadcaster of Gift Grub fame, Mario Rosenstock. Orla and Mario, you're very welcome to the studio.
Delighted to be here. Sure, it's only 90 minutes. Do we not get 14 minutes extra injury time?
You get a hydration break.
We get a hydration break.
What are you drinking in the hydration break, though? That's the worry.
I'll stick to the coffee. By the way, for people who don't know, it's absolutely freezing in here. John Duggan likes very highly air-conditioned studios.
Yes. We were having the studios rebuilt and it was very hot and I couldn't deal with it. So yeah. I've gone the opposite way, but we'll turn it on during the hydration break. We'll actually turn up the heat.
Yeah.
So you feel a bit better.
Brilliant. And I love the, when are we bringing on the GIMP? Is that the, what's that about?
It's not a Pulp Fiction reference. It's a reference to the Mexican masks.
Oh, yeah.
That I think Owen Shane and Owen Doyle went down for, I think, some burritos and they were very generous to give them some Mexican masks.
All right.
So it's a Mexican thing, obviously, for the World Cup. And on that, how many games have you watched of the eight so far?
I watched three or four. I wasn't going to watch anything at 4 o'clock in the morning.
No.
I gave up watching a bit of the punditry at the beginning on RTE as well. Kenny Cunningham just came in far too strong at the beginning. They went, and welcome, Kenny, how are you? Look, what do you mean by that? What are you talking about? Why did you say that? Now? Everybody else is there. You know, what's his name? Richie Sadlier, right? Who's basically like a yellow pack Fintan O'Toole. He kind of, it's sort of a Fintan O'Toole if Fintan O'Toole talked about football. And then the fella in the middle, Stephen Kelly, he looks like an extra in Mad Men with his little thing. Yeah, well, I'm just here, just enjoying myself with my little sweater. Yeah, what do you mean by a little sweater? What do you mean by a little sweater? That's not a sweater. That's a tank top. That's a tank top, right? That's a tank. Easy, Kenny. Easy. And then ostensibly, Richie just wants to talk about human rights, really. And I'm not just going to, you know. But so I kind of lost. They started off. They don't realise they've got 39 days left. So they've shot their load already, you know. So, and then they... Didi Himan, how did he stay there? They got rid of everybody. Eamon, you're fired. No. Johnny, you're fired.
Don't fire me, please. No, I'm just you have in the to corner have here.
You have to keep him.
What?
I love Didi. I think he's great. You have to keep him.
Yeah, Didi. And then they bring on James McLean last night. Tony O'Donoghue just goes, well, James, how are you? What do you think of Israel? Ah! You know, of course. So where James goes with this, you know, no matter what he says, he's going to get, you know, castigated. But I draw the line at watching Curaçao. I drink Curaçao. I don't watch them. Curaçao is a drink you mix with rum.
Cocktail.
It's a cocktail.
How are you going to get through the next 90 minutes? I do not know.
I
did it. I did South Korea, the Czechia at 5 a.m. and I was working next day and I felt...
Sounds like a drug.
Oh, John.
It sounds like... Yeah, I started off with Uzbekistan versus ketamine. I tried ketamine versus Congo. And then I moved on to Uzbekistan versus South Korea.
It was really, John, you're making it sound.
I did feel like on Friday I was working that I felt hungover without drinking.
Withdrawal.
But I felt wrecked.
Yeah, because you took that drug. You took South Korea versus Czechia. It's ridiculous. I mean, don't mix it with Curaçao. That goes wrong altogether.
Yeah.
And God forbid, don't watch Iran. I mean, what's going to happen when we watch Iran? Is there any way that the US can qualify to play Iran? Have you worked out?
I'm sure. I haven't done the bracket yet.
Is it like the GAA football draw? Is it that we just don't understand it?
Well,
who knows?
By the way, it's Loud 50 and Armagh 2-9 in the game. I'm just going to go through the supplements.
Yeah.
And try and keep a straight face throughout the show. Donegal raided by rebels. This is the Sunday Independent. Trump keeping low profile at the World Cup. So he didn't go to California for the first game. United States hammering Paraguay 4-1. The Sunday Times, against all odds, Cork fight back to stun Donegal for famous victory. And FEI secured back in a Palestine FA in talks at the World Cup. But this is about the Israel game going behind closed doors in October. Rebels piled on the ills of Donegal. Good headline. And England stars a boot stolen in World Cup heist by Craig Hope. Orla, talk to us about this.
I have to talk about this story. I love this story. It's brilliant. And it's like their van
was transporting their stuff down to Florida, right? And when they arrived, they discovered to their devastation the van was empty and there was one World Cup football left. But their boots had been sold, so they're their match boots, and they're like, you know, Jude Bellingham's name and figure and all this kind of stuff engraved on it. And all the stuff was taken and they were left. But they, like, they talk about this so seriously. Like, it's, it sounds like a parody. It's like something you would make up.
Yeah.
They're talking about how... you know, we can now reveal the full extent of the devastation that was felt when distressed logistics staff realised they had been the victims of a brazen plot. And this is like written with a straight face.
Yeah.
Do you know? Gone, sources say, was just about everything from one van. So it was all taken. And the most troubling thing of all is they'd smashed their table tennis table. Right. Left scattered outside were the items that remained. Panic phone calls ensued as news related to England's senior party. The bandits had even attempted to take the players' table tennis table, but it was smashed in the process. This is written with a straight face.
I know.
Witnesses have described the sorry sight of the table, so popular with the players, lying broken in the road. Like, this sounds like a teammate.
It is. This England do this in every World Cup, John. Just before the World Cup, they try to set up a situation where the Anglo-Saxon righteousness and the good men of England will be robbed. They'll be robbed, so they will, by the nobblers. The nobblers will nobble them. In 1970, it was Gordon Banks. The CIA done it. The CIA, they done our Gordon. And also Bobby Moore. They accused him of robbing the diamonds so he couldn't concentrate on his free kick. Right? And then what else? Then in 2006, I think it was, the Wags. The Wags done them in. David Beckham and the lads couldn't concentrate because of the Wags. And now it's
your boots been nicked.
They stole Jude Bellingham's boots.
Like, he doesn't have 10,000 pairs.
Yeah. So it's that sense of every World Cup for England is like a reenactment of that movie Zulu. You know, Michael Caine up his own. Okay, lads, stiffen up, brace up. The nobblers about to come and get us, but we'll stand up to them, by God, and we'll come through this.
So, well, they've been left their dartboard, so they're okay.
They've got left the dartboard,
left
right?
The dartboard.
They have something.
It's okay,
left.
They're safe. Yeah. And some Lego.
Great story, though. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it what paper is it?
In the Mail.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
Of course
yeah.
It is.
Yes. How do we feel about England? Because Mark Gallagher, actually in the same paper, has kind of written about England's chances this time and talking about 2006 and the golden generation and how
this
it all
is
kind
the
of
worry, John. The worry
apart.
Now, yeah. But the
but
worry
he,
now
he's
is
he's making the point that Tuchel is hard gone and he's come in clinically and actually the good of a good blend.
Yeah. And that's what we have to worry about. And now they've got this siege mentality thing because they had their van stolen, all their gear nicked. They had to shelter in place during a storm the other day. Mm. And also on the same page, their team chef was denied entry to a train because he was carrying his knives. So they couldn't have their meals prepared of their choice. Like, so the siege mentality is ongoing now, right? It's going to foster a great mentality in the England team and they're going to go a long way into the tournament and then hopefully meet with a devastating defeat.
Yeah, we want them, as usual, to go certain so far,
yeah,
but not too far.
Yeah, exactly.
Isn't that right?
Yeah.
We want to see the England, but then we want to see the agony as well.
Hmm.
I mean, I'm not one of those people that want to see, you know, I don't glory in the defeats by England, but there is a sense out there that I think that Tuchel knows what he's doing. But then again, everybody's got a plan until you get a punch in the face, you know, so we'll see if he knows what he's doing.
Yes.
Well, we all start off kind of thinking, you know, we know these players and we like them and we support them for their clubs and, you know, it'd be nice to see them get further into the tournament and we're going to take the mature approach this time around.
Yes.
And then the further they get,
it's the noise around it. I don't think people can't.
Yeah, Roy Keane was asked to put his first bet on with a gambling company for the tournament and he went, oh, anybody but England. Right, so that started their gambling thing off. But that leads me to an article.
Sunday Times, yeah.
Sunday Times article by Darren McGee, I think it is. And he's talking about how, he's talking about the capture, John, of the World Cup by the gambling companies. And now it's not just the gambling companies, it's the proto-gambling companies like Polymarket and Kalshi and how they are capturing the entire game of football. And he's talking about how there will be more young people participating in the gambling of football than there will be in the playing of football. He's also talking about something that I found quite interesting and a bit disturbing. I think it was down there somewhere where this recruitment, as he calls it, of youngsters to gambling in football has led to an upsurge in hate and threats against the players themselves. Because when you're losing money on this sort of stuff, you know, you're liable to engage in this kind of hatred. So all in all, it's a pretty dangerous cocktail and a pretty sad state of affairs when all we're doing is gambling on these games, and all the younger generation is supposed to be doing gambling. But it's only one thing in, I suppose, a cocktail of things that we've got to be, in my view, sorry about in this World Cup, you know?
So Darren McGee, he's an academic at the University of Bath and author of Imitation Games, How Gambling Hijacked Sport. There was a pretty stark thing he said in here in the piece. When Saturday came, so did an onslaught of inducements to bet, including free bet offers to reel in first-time users and loyalty bonuses to retain existing customers. For context, the opening weekend of the 2025-26 Premier League season featured almost 30,000 exposures to gambling brands across television, radio and social media alone in the form of shirt sponsors, advertising hoardings at grounds, broadcast adverts and more. A single match between Manchester City and Wolves featured no fewer than 5,262 gambling messages, about 20 for every minute of the broadcast. He calls it a cultural hijacking. I mean, I of all people love a bet. Responsibly, and I love the puzzle of trying to work out a horse race or work out a football match, but it's the insidious nature of its injection into society where it's just seen as accepted. That's the issue here.
It is the issue. I mean, I was, funny enough, I'm very strong on this in my own life, but having said that, I was doing a podcast with somebody the other day, and I remember saying to them how I had a 150 euro bet on Rory in 2011 to win the US. And of course, I enjoy the occasional bet myself, which is completely separate to the insidious injection, as you call it. I know, and I won't say any names, of course, but I know loads and loads of, through other people, young people, who are inveterately addicted to online gambling. And it's just unnatural. I couldn't imagine why they would. How did they get into this position?
The smartphone.
It starts early.
I know.
But it starts early.
But it's all wrong. It's really, really wrong.
It is. But it starts when people are kids, right? Because if you think about kids playing games.
That's right.
And online gaming platforms.
The conditioning.
Where they are given an opportunity to buy a surprise box or whatever it is, right? That's a form of gambling.
It is, yeah.
It's, without it necessarily
it's accumulating
being gambling.
Tokens and stuff like Fortnite.
Exactly. Digital currency.
That's right.
So you gamble something. Will I get, you know, 10 coins in this box or will I get 100?
Even the Tumagachi or whatever you call them, those collecting those little toys is part of that gambling process.
And it's all an early introduction. So then when they get older, it's an absolutely easy transition into gambling on your smartphone.
Yeah, look, somebody who's really good on this, Oisin McConville. You know, all you have to do is listen to Oisin McConville on this whole subject and he lays it out. It's insidious, it's dangerous, it's a total, it completely creates addicts. And an addict at 17 is almost impossible to fight it off, which is different to a person who has a problem when they're 40. But when you're a young child, a young kid, you can't fight it off. So anyway, that's one of the main problems that's this World Cup is going to be known for. But the other, I'm afraid, is, like, I love football, I love rugby, I love sport. I do sketches about them all the time. But we can no longer escape the idea that, here, listen, celebrate politics from football. You can't. You can't celebrate politics.
Or separation.
You can't separate politics from football in this World Cup. I mean, you've got a situation where, like, Gianni Infantino offered the FIFA Peace Prize to a guy who's bombing one of the countries involved in the World Cup. Now, it sounds ridiculous, but it isn't, if you analyse what I say. The United States should be kicked out of the World Cup. Why? They have illegally started a war against another country. It's not preposterous to say they shouldn't be allowed in the World Cup in the first place. The spectre, the idea, the appalling sight of Senegalese players being frisked and strip-searched at airports. The appalling vista of having Omar Artan, the Somalian referee who won best referee in Africa and went through all due diligence to get into the country, not being allowed in to being a referee. What kind of optics does this send to the world about America? America is not the country it used to be. In fact, it has turned into a rogue state. It is a rogue state. It is operating outside the law all the time with impunity. If the world is a schoolyard, America is the schoolyard bully. And where are we going from here? 2018, Russia. I know you were there, John, and you had the time of your life, but that was awarded under very dubious circumstances. Qatar, or as the Americans call it, Qatar, 2022. An appalling vista, you know, transgressions of human rights all over the place.
Yes, but this has been going on in sport for 100 years, back to the Berlin Olympics. Back to the Argentina World Cup in 1978, run by a junta when people were being thrown out of planes. This is not new that we're having this. And talking about the time of life, is just the only thing about that was I saw the celebration of different cultures, different peoples, the joy of colour, and the fact that people who'd been living in a prison in their country and back to being a prison now in Russia saw other people from different countries for the first time and celebration, the joy of football. So I could understand it, but...
Understood. The idea that it happened in the 36 Olympics in Berlin, the idea that it happened in 78 in Argentina is absolutely no excuse for it.
Of course not an excuse, happening. but it's history repeating itself.
Yes, but it shouldn't be. This has, like Roy Keane, first day of the World Cup in 2022, he said, these World Cup shouldn't be here. Yeah, he said it on BBC, this World Cup shouldn't be here, or ITV, wherever he was. He said it, this World Cup shouldn't be here, and it shouldn't have been in winter. And this World Cup, I mean, Orla, you made a really funny point, interesting point outside. Orla said, there are actually three World Cups going on, Mario. There are two World Cups, Mexico and Canada, and there's this aberrant World Cup going on in the middle. This strange outlier of a World Cup.
But you might, well, often though, the football just takes over. So by July the 19th, the football will be so dominant, Messi, Ronaldo, and most of these games in the United States, that like Qatar, like Russia, the big issues will dissolve.
Mm. Well, but then, John, I look forward to 2038 in North Korea.
Well, 2034 is in Saudi Arabia.
Well, North Korea will follow.
Yeah. They can't afford it. This is the thing. And Sean O'Connor wrote in the Sunday Independent that it's quite interesting. LA opener, one for the few, not for the many. Futuristic $5.5 billion setting is symbolic of a tournament where ordinary punters are priced out of the market. Like, just looking at the ticket prices, $960.
That was the cheapest.
Yeah, for the tickets.
Now, the thing is, they said it was packed. Now, was this for the USA Paraguay game?
Yes.
Two things about that. Apparently, and according to a lot of people who like football, Paraguay was one of the poorest displays of football they've seen in any World Cup at any time. Just the appalling standard. And second of all, the stadium wasn't full by any means. No. There were spots all over the stadium. So even in the opening game, America versus Paraguay, they can't fill the stadiums. I wonder, are FIFA going to do a directive where they instruct cameramen, do not film empty seats. Keep the shot tight on the pieces that are filled, because I think you're going to see lots of empty stadiums.
This is the Sunday Paper Review on Off the Ball here on News Talk. Mary Rosenstock and Orla McElroy in studio on the best riding of the day. Armagh turned it around against Louth, 214 to 115. They lead now by 2 points after 50 minutes of that round 2A All-Ireland qualifier in Aiskeen. What's happening in the round 2B game, the knockout game between Cavan and Dublin in Breffni Park? Tommy Rooney.
John, how you doing? Cavan are just breaking out of their own defence. They had a sideline in their own cornerback position and they've just about emerged it as Kieran Kilkenny tried to force a turnover. There's a right good atmosphere here. Cavan are giving Dublin their fill of it, but Dublin have just taken the lead in the last couple of minutes and lead by 6 points to four with just over 17 minutes and 30 seconds on the clock. Emmanuel Shehu from Cavan has kicked two lovely points. He actually sent Cormac Costello over the sideline with a shoulder as well. That was Dublin's only wide. Conor Callaghan got blocked down for another goal and actually missed a great goal chance a moment ago too, as I just watched Gerry Smith kick his second point of the game for Cavan. So the scoreline is now 6 points to five. But just before that Shehu point, the Dubs were winning by 5 points to three. They just kicked the score from Cormac Costello. Liam Brady tried to play one of these really precise kickouts over the top of the arc to a man about 45, 50 yards from goal. It got intercepted from Brian Howard. He slipped in Conor Callaghan. It had goal written all over it. The Dublin fans behind the goals here in the town end of Breffni Park were waiting for it. But Conn tried to square it. He tried to go for a back post goal. I don't know why he didn't just rattle the back of the net. It got intercepted and Niall Scully eventually punched it over the bar. I think Dublin need Conor Callaghan to go for the juggler there, because we saw David Clifford, we mentioned it earlier, celebrating that goal for Kerry. It's worth more for Dublin when Conn buries it. So we'll see, does he get another chance? 18 minutes and 40 seconds on the clock. Dublin 6 points, Cavan 5.
Thank you, Tommy Rooney, there at Breffni Park. Armagh with a 1 point lead over Louth, 214 to 116 after 51 minutes of that match in Aiskeen. There is a second chance for both of these counties. We're talking to Mary Rosenstock and Orla McElroy in the paper review about the FIFA World Cup. What is it with leading world figures and narcissism? Because there was a real shrug of the shoulders by Gianni Infantino the other day in his press conference, and he's bestriding the world like a king, and he is the king of football, and he's the king of football because he controls the purse strings. He can decide how much money he can give all to these associations, obviously through his boards and everything. Mm. But associations are going to do better than ever before, which means that he has the power in an iron fist
of FIFA. But there is a rupture for me at the FIFA World Cup between the ordinary fan, which has been the treasure of the World Cup back to 1930, and the naked and extreme commercialism of FIFA, which has gone beyond the line now. And that's where you're seeing the empty seats. That's where you're seeing the feeling that this is just unaffordable for the regular punter, and it's influencers and it's people with a lot of money. I mean, of the Brazilians that were there last night, you could say this about other World Cups, but just feels that this one now is taking FIFA and the World Cup to a different level. The bloated nature of it, 48 teams. How many Brazilians of ordinary means would have been there in New York last night? Very few, I'd expect.
Are you not going to get to New York if you're an ordinary Brazilian? Like, I was looking at the first match in the Azteca the other night, and they were showing kids in the crowd, and you're looking at it going, you might see kids at those games in Mexico, but you're not going to see them at the games in America, because surely the price of the tickets means nobody's going to be able to go to those matches. Like, it's ludicrous that, you know, football is meant to be the game of the people, and you have Infantino spouting all these things about football unites the world and all the rest of it, but it's ludicrous, because that's not the case. Like, people, the actual supporters of the teams are not going to get to go to the games, because you can't pay those prices.
No.
Who's going to pay that kind of money to go to watch their team?
There's other stuff going on as well, though. America still doesn't get football. I mean, you have the Knicks the other night, right?
And you're won it overnight.
Yeah. You're talking about, like, sort of 110 plays 105, right? So you're talking about a combination, 215 points scored. You're looking at Uzbekistan versus ketamine or whatever you wanted, right? And it's nil all after 120 minutes. The Yanks can't take that. They have no interest. So it's just a corporate.
Hence, I presume, all the FIFA changes that are speeding up the game. Have you noticed?
Yes.
On one hand,
yes. This would be welcome. This is Kalina, where they're shortening that. Get your throw-ins and your subs quick. Yeah. But and then you got the hydration break comes in, which is very much an American thing, where you now have four quarters and you got the hydration break. And what happens in America, the hydration break, is average.
It's an ad break.
Not only that, did you see the other night that they had to keep them on the pitch? The hydration break is meant to last, what?
Three minutes.
3 minutes. They had to keep it an extra minute because the ad breaks weren't finished on Fox.
Yeah.
So Fox controlled the match. All right? So they had to wait 4 minutes, not three. So the actual referee then has to go, no, lads, Fox isn't finished their ad break. So that's a big...
But that said, hydration breaks are necessary, but it's the time of the year that it's been engineered for.
The hydration breaks were legislative for. They were existing.
Steve Staunton could have had 10 of them in USA 94.
Fact of 50.
Fact for Paddy.
No, this is the one I was thinking about, the tackle discrimination law. This is a crazy one by FIFA, where basically go, if you go up to a fella and start talking through your hand like this,
how's it going?
You're going to get a red card, right, for
possibly organising a bit of racism there.
It's like, I didn't do any racism.
Yeah, but you're talking into your hand, which means you're a racist.
So now when you're talking into your hand, you're a racist now. So, racist, no, Ted. And that's a funny one as well, because how are they going to prove that one? So it's apparently in a confrontational situation that they've adjudicated. So if you're just, you know, the way they talk into their hands, it's a funny one. It's a strange one.
It's a tactical thing, they claim, isn't it?
Yeah.
What about the actual tournament itself then? Because what we are all hoping through all the cynicism, and a lot of us cynicism is justified, that the football will give us some moments of joy. And if you're from Australia and you're waking up, I woke up this morning and said Australia beating Turkey 2-0, I'm going, how did that happen?
Did you see the clip of the Scotland fans singing Flower of Scotland in the stadium?
No.
Oh, it's fantastic. Like, the noise level was unbelievable. Just when they sang the anthem, like how loud it was.
Oh,
and that's the kind of thing you love about the World Cup and you want to see. And there's loads of stories in the papers about Pico Lopez and, you know, that story about him playing for Cape Verde.
We'll get to that in a moment. Like, Rory Smith, football's eternal generation, refused to leave the stage. Like, about Messi and Ronaldo and Neuer and Modric and all these players. There's almost a couple of things about it. There's a fitness aspect, obviously, to it. But there's also this thing where I have to keep on holding on to this because of... There's probably nothing better than being at the top of elite level sport.
Yeah, well, I remarked about Paraguay earlier on.
Yeah.
And sorry for being a downer, right? But, like, the World Cup nowadays has become one of the lowest examples of football standard in the world, followed by the European Championships. The only time football gets really good anymore is the quarterfinals of the Champions League. So you get four quarterfinals, two semifinals, and an amazing final. That's where football is at its peak. I mean, this is really low standard for most of it. For about 3 weeks, we're going to have to watch really low standard football. Brazil won, Morocco won all last night. Yeah, I don't know. Paraguay losing 4-1 to an average USA team. So the standard is poor. So we have to get used to that as well, John. I mean, I don't know. You say it's going to take over. We're going to fall in love with it. I think Qatar was a, we were a bit lucky with it because especially the final was an unbelievable game of football between two great sides, which was incredible. But I don't necessarily, you have to be lucky to get those games. I think we're just going to be, they're doing exactly what the Republicans love doing. They're flooding the zone. They're flooding the zone with awful stuff. So,
but the timings of the Qatar World Cup were so much better. So yeah, it's fine when the games are being handed to you.
32 is enough. 32 is enough because Germany got knocked out in the group stage. Argentina lost their first match. Japan beat Spain and Germany. England obviously had a run. Wales were there.
There's no jeopardy in this first round.
The last 32 on the June the 29th. I mean, this is June the 14th. So we're talking probably another 2 weeks of an amuse-bouche, as I keep on calling it, until the World Cup starts on the June the 29th with the last 32. And it's knockout then. And then it will get good.
It's an amuse-bouche, but we all end up with gout at the end of it. So
It's gone straight into then, fillet steaks and everything. But
John can't keep away from the fillet steaks. No. He's straight into it.
Chocolate cakes and fillet steaks.
Yeah, yeah. Chateau.
But it's interesting because Lamine Yamal, you're hoping that he will do something at this World Cup. I mean, remember Mario Götze scored for Germany against Argentina. Messi played that game in Rio 2014. That day, Lamine Yamal turned 7.
Right.
So you're hoping that, there'll be these new stars that will come through and young players. And sometimes World Cup do make players, like Mbappe was made eight years ago. Now, people were expecting him to do something, but then at 19 years of age, you're hoping that there will be new stars.
I suppose so, yeah. I mean, somebody was saying the other day, but you were talking about England earlier on, and saying, do we give England a chance? And then I was listening to somebody who knows what they're talking about, saying England won't do well in the later stages. And I said, why is that? And they went, because this will be a hot World Cup. It'll be very hot. And it's going to be based on possession football. And the best possession football team in the world is Spain. And so if you put something like Spain, Lamal and everything up against, Yamal. Not Kajagugu.
That Roy Keane.
Yeah, no, Lamal. Lamal was in Kajagugu. Lamine Yamal doesn't go along singing, "You're too shy." He doesn't. But
he did.
But I wish he did. Just before his goals. Hush, hush, adiwai. But that they'll hold on to the ball with the possession football.
Yes, and England
will do the usual thing of, we nobly ran around for about 2,000 minutes, but God, we got beaten again. So that might happen. Lamine Yamal, we hope. Who else? Is there a couple of other? Like Mbappe, I completely dislike Mbappe. He's the most unlikable little mercenary. He's awful. He's awful. There's the endless clip of him on CNN when you listen, because I watch CNN because I'm a politics junkie. And they have a clip of Mbappe talking to the reporter. He goes, I have a lot to give to the football. Yeah, you do. You have a lot to take from the football. Yeah, we know.
Well, he's outstanding.
Outstanding. He's awful.
Nah. Hat-trick in a World Cup final. Yeah. Goal a game for Madrid.
Yeah, of course. He's a great player, John. You're a great talent. But like, just don't get
stood up against whether you're interested in the politics, spoke out ahead of the French elections last year when it was going a certain way that probably was not the right way. So did use his platform well, I felt, Kylian Mbappe that time.
Ronaldo, I mean, Portugal are a factor, aren't they?
Well, I think Portugal, they're my pick to win, so.
Did you?
Because of the midfield, as you say, it's about controlling the ball in the feet. And I don't think you can play the high press and this really intense style.
And which are they going to play, Ronaldo?
All the time, because they have to.
Yeah. Why do they have to?
Well, this is the thing, but well, first of all, is Gonzalo Ramos going to be able to lead it? Ronaldo does score still.
Yeah, does he?
But there is somebody almost bigger than the team.
Yeah.
And with Neymar and Brazil, it doesn't seem to have that power, but Ronaldo has the power, I feel.
Mm. Neymar, I mean, really.
Yeah. He's on the sidelines last night, wasn't he? Watching.
He was. He won't be back for a week. He hasn't played since, 2023.
What shape are Brazil in, John?
Watched it last night.
I saw the second.
Vinicius Jr., it's class. Scored a really good goal, but midfield, I'd worry about them. Casemiro taken off. Worry about the depth of their midfield. But they do have a lot of talent. But it just felt to me, watching them, that they were all over the shop in the first half hour. And Ancelotti probably needs more time with them to get the best out of them. So you think about Spain, a well-drilled machine, European champions, Rodri, Fabian Ruiz, Pedri, Gavi, all these players, like Mikel Merino, Otamendi, these Arsenal players, they control the ball. And Portugal's midfield have got two Champions League winners, Vitinha and João Neves, Bernardo Silva, Bruno Fernandes. Look like players control the ball. I don't know if Brazil will be able to control the ball enough. And ultimately, their form graph is not suggesting that they're going to win. You have to suggest that Argentina got a better chance. Mm. I mean, won the Copa America, won the World Cup, top qualifying, even if Messi's now turning 39 in the tournament. So on that, like we were looking back through the papers here, and Ger Siggins from Irish Daily Mail, like going back to his childhood and 1970. And
Ger Siggins, John, wrote a lovely article. And in the article, he cites another article. And that, article was Paul Howard's lovely article in the Irish Times this week.
Yeah.
And Paul makes the point that's true, that the World Cup we all really remember is the World Cup when we were 11 or 12, or give or take 1 or 2 years. And in Paul's case, it was 1982, that wonderful World Cup. Mine too, 1982, which featured 24 teams. And it was the first time that they had gone to 24 teams from 16 teams. And I'd previously, my first World Cup that I remembered was 1978, the ticker tape World Cup, as you've already alluded to, in Argentina. But I played football a lot around then. And it was a good time for me, John, because I was called Mario. And so when I went in to play football, lads were going, he's actually called Mario. And Mario Kempes was the star of the 1978 World Cup. And Paul makes the remarks in his article, which is funny, because the commentary in the 1978 World Cup was like Mission Control in NASA. So you just went,
rinse and drink. Oh, Johnny Hedgeman. Oh, D-Lays. Kempes! Houston, we have a problem. Argentina, we have a problem. Johnny Rick.
So remember that? Do you remember that?
David Coleman, yes.
No, well, I wasn't David. Well, I'm not doing David Coleman. I'm just doing any commentator who is there.
He's like, Cubillas.
And it was like, can I make out who he's saying? Is his name Cubillas?
The outside of the foot with Cubillas.
It's like Armstrong Aldrin.
And I'm surprised all of these commentators didn't get sent off for talking into their hand.
But anyway, for racism. All of the commentators were racist for talking into their hand. Anyway.
But anyway, 78 was the first time I remember. The land of the disappeared and all that.
Yes.
And then 82. And 82 was Socrates with his bulging shorts and his smokes. He used to smoke. And he was not like quite like Willie Duggan in the sense that he didn't have the smoke coming out of the tunnel. Right? And then we used to hear these things. Do you hear Socrates played for UCD, yeah? Oh, yeah. Do you remember that, John? Yeah, Socrates. Yeah, no, Socrates was an obstetric student in UCD. He was studying a doctor. He's Dr. Socrates, is he? And he was playing with UCD. Useless he was. Absolutely useless. Bagger Doyle had him in his fingers. Absolutely had him. Socrates, we had him. Yeah, and so Socrates and the amazing Zico. And then, of course, that game. The game which was that World Cup. Italy versus Brazil. In that peculiar little second round triumvirate. Argentina, Italy and Brazil. The most amazing second round sequence of games you could ever imagine. The aristocrats of world football. Featuring a young Diego Maradona kicked out of the tournament by Gentile. And then the amazing match between Italy and Brazil in which Paolo Rossi scored 3 goals. The memories you have of Falcao scoring to get back in the game to make it 2-2. Socrates, the incredibly gangly, useless and awkward Serginho up front couldn't kick a barn door. He should have been playing for UCD. That was the guy that was in UCD. And it was like all these guys, Falcao, Alemão, Socrates, Serginho. What? The lad is useless. He could be crumbling United. And so it was just incredible memories. And then it came to the semi-finals and you had that world-class epic between France and Germany. Germany 3-1 up, 3-1 down, and France and Germany come back to level it and go into extra time. And then it's penalties. And I'll never forget the immortal words of Jimmy McGee, the great commentator. And he went the German for the penalty. And here comes Horst Rubesch. Rubesch, the man they call the monster. And Horst Rubesch stuck it in the net, and Germany went through. Klaus Fischer scored in extra time. and then featured that terrible tackle between Schumacher and Battiston,
yeah.
Which, imagine seeing that in the modern day.
They are.
FIFA would have allowed him off. He would have given him a peace prize. Schumacher is awarded the FIFA peace prize for decapitating a player.
Attempted murder.
Peace prize to Schumacher. Yes. And then the final, Tardelli, in that epic celebration where he's shaking his head like this, and Bruno Conti on the right wing, who always looked like he was in the mafia on the run. He just like they've gotten away with it. Where is he? Conti's running off down the road with a bag of money. Because he always looked like he was on the run from a... Because he was just like... The Italians always looked as if they were getting away with it. But they played this Catenaccio style of football to its extreme. They sucked you in and then they exploded out. And then finally, my last World Cup then of memories would have been the 86, and that's Maradona, yes. And he's my favourite player of all time, and he's the greatest player of all time, the greatest player has ever lived. And again, I have to say it because I had another person on my podcast talking about this, and it's we all know it, McGee, different class. But the McGee different class, it's endlessly great to talk about because Maradona gets the ball, Hoddle falls down like a noble Englishman. Hoddle falls down in the centre circle. Hoddle falls. Enrique, Maradona, different class. Different class! And that's all he said. He said different class twice. And if you go back and you can, I've looked up the Argentinian and the Brazilian commentary and all you can hear is when you see the Argentinian commentary, you go, Diego Armando Maradona, genio, el fútbol mundial, Maradona, Diego Armando, Maradona, genio, tac, 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 But McGee was far better with different class, different class. What an amazing punctuation that he had with commentary, you know.
Well, less is more. George Hamilton was in on Breakfast during the week just talking about silence, the importance of silence in commentary. Got to take a break here, I know. But that's why I'm kind of talking about the football here. And I know that obviously the very serious issues around the world and everything. But you want that 11-year-old to just, for the first time, fall in love with this World Cup and see great matches and see great players. And hopefully later in the tournament, you're going to get that. Boy or girl, you know. What was your first memory of a World Cup?
90,
yeah. 90. Wow, what a one to pick.
Yeah. And I remember being away on a family holiday, stuck on a campsite in France for the penalty shootout and sitting in one of those, you know, those tiny little rooms where they have a games room where there's a TV stuck in the corner.
Yeah.
And every Irish person on the campsite was sitting there on their plastic lawn chairs that they'd brought in to watch the match and watch the shootout. And yeah, that's the first one I really remember.
Yeah.
But good memory, though.
Yeah, and 94 as well, you're probably still young enough to be in that magical place.
Yeah. Yeah, and looking at Giant Stadium last night and, you know, telling my young lad about watching Ireland playing in Giant Stadium.
Yeah.
It's a different world for him when he looks at football now.
Yeah.
Although he is supporting Cape Verde. He did one of those surprise shirt boxes and
he got a
Cape Verde shirt. Like, what are the chances?
Wow.
So he's going around now going, yeah, I'm a Cape Verde fan.
Very good.
The Sunday Paper Review on Off the Ball.